Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of April 13th. This week we celebrate our 100th anniversary with our special centennial issue, which features articles by Timothy Radcliffe, Elizabeth Johnson, and others. To commemorate the centennial here on the podcast, we have discussions with some of our editors, from Father Joseph O'Hare, Father George Anderson, and others. Hello, this is Tim Reedy, and I'm joined right now by Father George Anderson, Associate Editor of America. Welcome, Father Anderson.
Thank you very much. I would like to share a few memories about some of our former editors on the magazine, and one I'm thinking about right now is Father Charlie Whalen. Very, very remarkable and personally a friend to me. When I first came here in 1994 as an associate editor, I really knew very little, if anything, about computers. And Charlie at the time was teaching full-time at the Fordham Law School and a very busy man. But what stands out in that is he was incredibly patient. I needed somebody to teach me how to do the basics of a computer. And despite his being busy, he took time for that. And he's one of those teachers who would say to you, if you come back to him the next day, you know, I don't think I understood what we did yesterday, he will say, well, I'll show you again. Now, if I tried that with one of the other editors, it would not go over. I would be sent to the door immediately and probably into the street. So Charlie was that kind of person. And at first, I didn't have a computer. If I wanted to use the internet, for example, I would go down to the controller's office, different person down there at that time, and there was a big model down there. And he would sit with me and show me how to go on to the internet and to look things up that I was working on, as well as then making sure that I did eventually have an old computer in my little office, which was at that time right on here on the third floor where Tim Reedy is. So he taught me that through his wonderful patience. And not just with me, because sometimes I would see law students coming to see him. He would invite them to lunch, and there they would be discussing their issues about law. Even though now he, because of some health setbacks, he still moves around the building very well, and also out on the street, not very far. So it's a pleasure to still see him here. Here we are now in March of 2009. I see him almost every day. And when I greet him, it's with a genuine sense of gratitude and thankfulness that we have remained in touch all these years. And he did a lot of writing for the magazine. He was the one who followed the proceedings of the Supreme Court. He was really considered a brilliant lawyer. He came here right from law school, I believe, and followed those complicated matters and often wrote editorials about developments in the Supreme Court that would have an interest for Readers of America magazine. So he does not do that now, but he follows it all, and he will, you know, could happily talk a lot about any of the issues coming up. So my gratitude to Father Charlie Whalen, or just Charlie for me, I'm so thankful to him that even now I can turn to him occasionally with a computer problem that I wouldn't dare to bring to anybody else who would jump down my throat for asking such a silly question. So that, I think, is all I can share right now with Charlie, but the memories come to me thick and pleasant and filled with gratitude for this remarkable man who is now into his 80s. I believe he's 83 at this time.
And Father Whalen has been here since, I think, 1962. He's by far the longest serving editor in the magazine.
Absolutely, yes. And all that time, you know, he's been such a real part of the magazine. And while he was at Fordham Law School, his salary was a big part of the funding for the community and the magazine. So he was a major contributor financially. As the longer he stayed, the more his salary grew until his actual retirement, both from law school and from the magazine. But he's an ever-living presence here and will hopefully continue to be that for many years to come.
We're joined here by Father Jim Martin, who's going to share some memories of America, his time here at America. Now, you've been here since what year?
Well, I was here for 1 year in 1995, but I've been here continually since 1999, so I've been here really for 10 years.
Okay, and one of sort of the towering figures here in America for a long time was Father John Donahue, who recently left, but you had a close relationship with.
I did. He was not only a colleague, but I should say also my confessor, which is probably more of a Jesuit community thing to talk about, but John was here, I think, for something like 40 years, some huge wow. number like that. And he's 92 now, I believe. But I have to say, one of the grand old men of the Society of Jesus, and really, I think, one of the finest Jesuits I've ever known. Just a wonderful person, a real person who took interest in almost everything. And he had a great sense of humor, too. John, I remember one time we were at lunch, and he was asked to write the editorial on Bosnia. This is 1995 when I was a regent here at America Magazine, and John sort of got up from lunch and sort of pushed his chair away and sighed. And he said, well, I have to go write the editorial now. And I said, what are you writing it about? And he said, Bosnia. You know, it seemed like every week we were writing something about Bosnia. And I said, oh, no. I said, what are you going to say? And he said, as little as possible. So, and just, you know, he had an encyclopedic memory as well. He had these, this is sort of pre-internet and, you know, really pre-computer for John. He had files, huge file cabinets filled with clippings from, you know, decades past. And I remember one time I was writing a very long article on Opus Dei. This was 1995. And John handed me his clipping file about Opus Dei, which was very helpful, which had articles from the London Spectator and, you know, little yellowed clippings from the Times. And it was very helpful. And that's what he would use to help him write his Of Many Things and his articles. And the other story I want to tell about John is when Christopher Hitchens came out with that book, I think it was 94, maybe it was later, on Mother Teresa called The Missionary Position. Yes. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Which was really scurrilous. And, you know, the point being that Mother Teresa had taken all these, according to Hitchens, unjust contributions from dictators and less than savory figures, you know, which she did, and she talked about kind of using them for the poor. And the point was that Mother Teresa was not a, you know, not perfect and shouldn't be called a saint. So John said, well, I'm going to write an article about that. And I thought, well, good, you're going to give it to him and, you know, say how wonderful the saints were and how Mother Teresa was perfect and blah, blah, blah. And he wrote a piece which we framed and we have on the wall downstairs called Holy Terrors, yes. Which was basically, I mean, it really helped sort of inform my own thinking about the saints, basically that, well, you think Mother Teresa was bad or, you know, if you sort of critique her about that, here are some saints that were even worse. It was very counterintuitive and talked about Jerome and wonderful sort of stories of the lives of the saints. It said, you know, that basically these people weren't perfect. I mean, they weren't, you know, they were human beings. And really provided a response to the Hitchens piece in a way that I would have never thought of doing. So just a kind man, a very funny man, and a real, just a sort of a model Jesuit, I think, a model Jesuit editor as well. That's how I remember him.
Well, Father John Donahue is living up now at the Fordham Community. I'm sure reading America every week. I'm not sure if he's listening to our podcast.
I don't know if he's listening to the podcast. But, you know, he resisted sort of using the computer, too, for a long time. He would bang out things on his Selectric and would take, I think one of the editors used to go and try to find him replacement ribbons, which became increasingly difficult for him. But just a lovely person. And for me, kind of a model of what a Jesuit editor should be like.
Yeah, it's great, man. I feel privileged that just for a short time I got to sit on the editorial board when he was across the way. So we wish him well, and we want to thank Father Jim Martin for coming by.
My pleasure.
I'm here with Karen Sue Smith, who is the editorial director here at America and joined the staff, was it just about 3 years ago?
That's right.
Now, Karen's going to share some thoughts and memories of, you know, like me, he's only been in America a brief time, but still has a good impression of the place. Very different from church, where you had people who worked there for many years, but here there's a little more turnover.
That's right. When I was at Church Magazine, one of the great aspects to it was that there was virtually no turnover among the staff, and especially the staff that worked with me. I had the privilege of working with Mary Good, one of the best people you could ever work with, and she was at my side, by my side, for the entire time that I worked there. I saw very, very little turnover on the staff. There's a real strength in that. But here, when I came, I was new. Then we got Tim. Remember, you
sure.
came.
Yeah.
Then we would get a few young people. I noticed we had some young interns who would come for a specific amount of time, sometimes a year, sometimes half a year, sometimes 2 years. Often they were students or graduate students and just came certain days during the week. Then we would get what are called scholastics. These are Jesuits that are still in formation. The process is very long, and they would come here for a specific amount of time, too. But somehow I hadn't realized that the Jesuits who were here, especially the younger Jesuits, were in this process. and that they would be moving on. And so when it came time for the first batch of people, I had just become close to some of these young guys. I really, really loved them and loved getting to know them. And the next thing I know, they'd be leaving. And I think, oh, no. So we'd get a couple of more, and in 6 months or so, they'd leave. And I think, wow, how are we ever going to put out a magazine when the people just keep leaving like that? And now, this last year, we have three fellows that have contributed so much to the magazine that it's almost impossible to realize that they are really leaving. And that's Jim McDermott and Jim Keane and Matt Malone. They are all three very talented and very valuable members of our staff, and they have taken this with a real relish. Well, I began to see they are about ready to leave, and they're going to go on and finish out their education and do the different things that they need to do as young Jesuits. And I began to think of it in a different way, and I saw that really they are here mostly for their benefit. We are having them join us for their benefit. It's not that they're here to benefit us as the editors so much as it's not just like your normal employment situation. And when I think of it that way, I see how wonderful it is and how privileged we are to have such young, gifted people, such great talent coming through here. It's almost like a pulsating bloodstream that comes through and enriches our lives here in America. And how much I thank them and looking forward to seeing other people as they come through too, and where they go to and how they live out their commitment to the church and to the mission of the church.
Yes, the young people, that definitely gives you hope for the future of the magazine, the future of the church, when you have, this kind of lifeblood coming through here.
Exactly. And the other thing it does is it makes you feel terrific about the Jesuits and their future if this is the kind of young person that they attract.
Well, Karen Smith, thank you for sharing those observations, and, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
I'm joined now by Father Jim McDermott, Associate Editor at America. Welcome, Father Jim.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Now, Father Jim is going to talk about a few people who we could not get in the podcast room to talk about themselves. Tom Rees, who, of course, is no longer editor here and doesn't live here. And then Father Bob Collins, Brother Frank Turnbull, both big parts of the magazine, but a little shy about talking about themselves.
Under the radar.
So, Father Jim, why don't you introduce these people to us?
Sure. Well, Tom Rees is someone that clearly needs no introduction.
Of course.
He hired me in 2004, in the fall of 2004, and I had the pleasure of working with him for a year. And, the thing that everyone knows, he's this great expert on the church. He worked in America for a long time. He has many skills, but one that I discovered working here was there are so many other things besides sort of the editorial end of the magazine that he was always involved with. So, for instance, he created the website.
Yep.
He taught himself how to do HTML. He taught himself how websites work, and he was the one that kind of said, well, we have to be working in this technology. Amazing. And so that was, so when I would come home at night, if I went out to a play or went out to dinner, you'd get home at 10 or 11, and the lights would still be on in the editorial office because he was still working on the website.
Mm-hmm. He deserves a lot of credit for getting all that material up there.
Big shout out to Tom Rees. The other thing, which is sort of crazy, is he knew the heating of the building. If people had problems with the heat, they would go to Tom. Tom was the only one, actually, for quite a while, that knew how to fix the heat in people's rooms or how to deal with the heaters downstairs.
I have yet to get a question. I do get a question occasionally about, like, my printer isn't working because I figure I'm working on the web. I should know how to do these things. I haven't got any questions about my heat isn't working. But maybe one of these days
It's not a connection that everyone would make, that if a guy who does the internet and editorial, that he might also do the heating. But I think when Tom was here as an associate editor, he just made a point of learning all these things about the house.
Right.
That he kept. I mean, he liked kind of dealing with all that stuff. He liked it, and I think he hated it when he was editor-in-chief.
Okay, and then we're going to talk about Father Bob Collins, also is still managing editor and has been here for, I don't know, at least...
Forever.
1909, I think.
No. Happy anniversary, Bob!
No, he's been managing editor for at least, I think he has had two terms as managing editor, at least since the 90s.
What I was thinking of, so the way America works, some people imagine that it's this sprawling office, sort of a bullpen where all the editors have, like, either just desks or offices, but it doesn't work like that at all. Actually, most of the editors Most of the Jesuit editors, they actually edit, et cetera, from their rooms. Their bedrooms have a second wing that are like offices. And then on the second floor, so that's, there are 9 stories in the building. That's in the upper stories of the building. On the second floor, there's an editorial office, which is a bigger space. And Frank Turnbull, the assistant to the editor, Bob Collins, the managing editor, and Stephanie Radcliffe have seats there. Stephanie Radcliffe's the art design person. So when I first came, living in the building, I had my office on 6, fine. But I would come down sometimes to edit things, and I discovered that the editorial office is where it all happens. And that, in one way, that's obvious because Bob's the managing editor, Frank's assistant, the design, all that kind of stuff. But it's also just there's a great energy there. And if you sit and edit your manuscripts there rather than in your office, I discovered, there's always kind of this kind of playfulness going on between Frank, usually between Frank and Bob.
Yes.
So, for instance, if Frank will cough, you know, then a second later you'll hear, you know, and Bob is kind of, as Bob is very much, he'll look 120% at work, and he is on the managing editor kind of stuff, the editing of the manuscripts. But he's always kind of got an ear open to what's going on around him, and he can be kind of a mocker.
Yeah,
you know, kind of playing with the sounds, especially with the sounds of the people around him, mimicking it,
yeah,
adding a little dig here and there, saying things like, "Oh, what's so nice to see you here today," which I get on a somewhat regular basis.
Like, nice to show up this morning.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of wow, thing. So are you just stopping through? It's so good to see you. And I, with Frank as well, I think Frank must like Inspector Clouseau, because when the phone will begin ringing, and it's often his job to answer the phone, it's, he'll say, "Hello, hello, is this the party to whom I am speaking?" So there's this great spirit which probably wouldn't get written about or would be overlooked, but I think is just, for me, has always been a great part of working at the magazine.
And you mentioned Brother Frank, who's also been here for a very long time and very important part of the magazine. He's the one who kind of shepherds all the manuscripts through the process, make sure they get on the editorial's editor's desk and then off to the other editors to review. So he's a very important cog in this machine.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And he's also kind of the guardian or the gatekeeper of the editor-in-chief. So if you call, out there in Radioland and you have a question and you get connected to a male voice, it's probably to Brother Frank Turnbull, who will do his best to help you, even if your request is completely insane.
And a very sweet guy. He's very well liked by all of the staff, especially absolutely. I think the people in the business office really have taken a liking to him. So,
yeah.
And there's one more person you want to talk about who is not on the staff here, but who has been helpful to America over the years, and that's Mr. Ed Jamieson.
Yeah, absolutely. I came to America with degrees in English, but with no journalism background. And when I came, Tom Reese said, "Okay." He looked at some of the things I had written and said, "Okay, I think if this is going to work, I want you to work with somebody who knows how to edit manuscripts so that you can learn a more journalistic style." So there was a man who, I don't know how he and Tom got connected, but his name's Ed Jamieson. He was the executive editor of Time magazine, actually, for quite a while, retired now, living here in Manhattan. Big Catholic, I think he's a parishioner at St. Ignatius and a big fan of America. And I spent about 2 years, my first 2 years here, I would bring him manuscripts that I was editing or things that I was writing. He would make comments. He would make suggestions.
That's great.
And yeah, and he's an incredibly wise man. He's one of these people that has been around the block a lot and could offer, you know, real sage advice on a lot of different things.
Well, it's important to note those people who never appear on the masthead, but yeah, who have been essential to our success over the years.
For me, especially at anniversary time, it's really important for me to be grateful to the people who have allowed me to be able to work as well as I have.
All right. Well, Father Jim McDermott, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tim.
I'm joined right now by Father Dennis Lenihan, Associate Editor at America. Welcome, Father Dennis.
Thank you, Tim. It's very good to be here.
Now, Father Dennis was going to share some thoughts and memories of various people who have had an influence on the America community, but who maybe don't appear on the masthead. So maybe you can introduce some of those people to us.
Well, I first came here in 1992 on a sabbatical, the only one that I've ever had. And one of the editors became ill very shortly after I arrived here, and all of a sudden I found myself as an associate editor. And I must admit that I reveled in the job, but realized I had to go further than that. And the second part of the sabbatical I spent in Africa, and then went back to teaching and realized that this was my first love. And so I came back here in December of 1994. When I first came in 1992, we had any number of very extraordinary people in the community and on the editorial staff, many of whom had been missionaries in the Third World. At that time, on a sabbatical himself, was Father Patrick Ryan, now the Vice President for Mission and Ministry at Fordham University. He had been a regular author of the Word column for many years, and in the 6 years that he did it in Ghana, we never received it late. It was one of his very best efforts. He wrote a St. Patrick's Day of many things for us one time, and it was going to be about the celebration of St. Patrick. And he began by saying, well, now, St. Patrick is not just any saint, as you will realize by looking at the signature at the bottom of this column. So his humor was always very much part of his consciousness, but also the stories that he shared in the Word column and with us at the Daily Mass were really quite remarkable. Father Tom Stahl, an associate editor and then eventually managing editor as well as executive editor, God rest him, had been one of my schoolmates when I was in college at St. Louis University. And he had had quite a very varied and interesting career, but right before he came back to America to be executive editor, he had been the novice master in Bolivia. And then when he left America, he went to Nigeria to be novice master there. And then at the very end of his life, he came back and was with us just before he died. I think the two people who were in that category, though, who most affected me were Father James Stair, who was our minister for a good while here, and Father John Long.
Now, these are both people who lived in the house, and some of our listeners may not be familiar, but in addition to the editors of the magazine, there are other Jesuits who live here, and Father Stair was the minister. He was kind of the leader of the community here.
Very much so, especially given the circumstances of the time. And he was a remarkable addition. But Father Stair had been a brother when he first entered the society, and he was a man of remarkable talent. His family had owned a restaurant. He was one of 11 children. He was a carpenter. He was an electrician who completely rewired St. Andrew on Hudson, our old formation house, and then was the minister at Xavier High School in New York. But he then decided, and with discernment and prayer and talking to superiors, that he really should be ordained. And no one had any objection. So he went to theology in Canada, studied, received his degree, was ordained, and then immediately went to the missions in Micronesia, where he built the agricultural school. And then, once that was finished, he went to Nigeria, where he helped to construct the retreat house by doing the design work on it, along with Jerry Menkaus. And then, when he began his declining years, in his 70s, he came back here and was our father minister. Once again, palpable holiness, huge competence. And the thing that made him particularly valuable in the community was, as far as brothers and priests goes, he was the best of both worlds. He was one of the most practical men and also one of the most spiritual.
Now, the second person you mentioned was Father John Long, who also lived here at America House and had a special connection to Vatican II that maybe you could explain to our listeners.
Father Long, as a young man, although he grew up in the Roman Rite in a completely Irish family in Brooklyn, was fascinated by the Eastern Rite. And so he learned and studied and became by ritual, but the whole time I knew him, he practiced only the priesthood in the Roman Rite. Because he was as brilliant as he was sent to Rome for studies and began his doctorate just before the Second Vatican Council. Even there, his brilliance was recognized, and he was plucked from studies and made one of the assistants to Cardinal Augustin Bea, also a Jesuit, who was the forerunner for the Holy Father for ecumenical affairs. He was a cardinal. He had considerable clout, and Father Long was his right-hand man for many years and then continued that under Cardinal Jan Willebrands, who took Cardinal Bea's place. Father Long had various jobs in Rome. The last one that he had was as rector of the Russian College, the seminary which the Jesuits run for those who were expecting to be priests ministering in Russia in the Latin Rite, but also requiring a familiarity with the Eastern Rites. Well, again, I mentioned with Father Stair declining years. In Rome, declining years come a little earlier than they do on the missions. And Father Long, one day after a birthday, was called over to the Jesuit Curia and let know by letter that he was out as rector of the Russian college. So he was therefore free to come back to New York, which he did. And he came first to America House, and it took him about 3 months, I think, to really settle in. After his death, I reflected that he and I had had at least a half-hour conversation every day for about 10 years. And obviously, his conversations were about his experiences in the ecumenical world, his experiences in working in the Roman bureaucracy. And he was the staunchest man of the church. But he also had a sardonic eye for all of the bureaucracy and other things that certainly raise eyebrows sometimes in Rome. He was an extraordinary counselor to the editors. We could always go to him. He was filled with information. And he didn't like to write, which was a terrible tragedy. He just couldn't get things down on paper. And on those few occasions when we did persuade him to, he was constantly coming up right down to press time with revisions because as a trained historian, he wanted everything to be perfect.
Right. That's an editor's dream when you...
absolutely. So those two men, along with many others, Father Donald Hinfey, who is here with us now, who has been mission superior in Ghana, had been tertian instructor and novice master after his own studies in Rome, all of these men add a certain character to the community. And it's not just the community that has this sense of mission-mindedness. Our associate editor and former editor-in-chief, Father O'Hare, spent 11 years as a missionary in the Philippines, beginning when he was 21 years old. Father Jim Martin, as a young man, as a scholastic, went out to Kenya and founded a program to empower refugees in commerce. We're always in touch with these people who we have met on the missions or in our work in the Third World. And so it very much shapes our consciousness and the things that get into the magazine that you read, either from our choices of what we wish to publish or the things that we write ourselves. So it's to these people who are kind of unsung that I'd like to pay a special tribute on our 100th anniversary, because the ones I've picked out are just the latest. This has been true for 100 years. In the corridor on the third floor, we have a picture of Father Walter Chizek, the author of He Leadeth Me and With God in Russia, who spent many years as a captive in Siberia after a period of solitary confinement in the Lubyanka. When he was released, it was to America that he first came, and it was America and Father Dan Flaherty which enabled him to write his memoirs. And so the consciousness of the editors of that time in the early 60s was hugely raised by his presence and his great good wit. So for all of these people, I just want to give a little bit of thanks and hope that some of their courage rubs off on the rest of us.
We're joined now by Father Joseph O'Hare, former editor-in-chief of America, current associate editor. Welcome, Father O'Hare.
Good to be here, Tim.
Now, Father O'Hare is going to share some memories of his predecessor as editor here, Father Donald Campion.
Yes, yeah, Don Campion was a sociologist, and he had been involved in a project in the late 60s in connection with a survey that they were doing of the American role of the Jesuits in the United States. I was in the Philippines at the time, and I came back when my brother-in-law died, came back for us just as for the summer, and he knew that I was coming back, and he said, "Why go stay at Fordham? Why don't you come here and stay at America?" So I did, and while I was here for about, I guess it was about 2 months, April and May, he got me into writing editorials and all the rest. So then the following year, when I was going to come back from the Philippines for good, I think the New York Province had the idea that I should get into higher education and some kind of administration. So that was one proposal, to go up to Lemoyne and start teaching and get room for administration. But then Don Campion invited me to join the staff here, and I thought I'd do that for a couple of years. And I did it, I guess, for 3 years, 72 to 75. But Campion, he was an interesting guy. He was, among other things, he was a great sponsor of younger Jesuits. I mean, he had been chair of the board when they had Woodstock College up here on the west side, and he really would try to encourage younger Jesuits in different ways. I always had one of the interesting things about Don Campion, unlike some other older men who would sort of pick up proteges, he never wanted to control or manipulate people. He just wanted to get you started. So he got me here, and when I started out, then the first, I think in the first 6 months, he had to go to Europe to work in the Roman, to do some task at the Jesuit headquarters in Rome. And he asked me to fill in for him so that when he was finally permanently assigned as the press officer at the Jesuit headquarters in Rome, it was sort of natural that I would succeed him because I had filled in for him the times that he was away. But he was a very interesting guy in many ways. He had been in Rome covering the Second Vatican Council and writing letters from Rome while he was for America while he was in Rome covering the Second Vatican Council. Well, then when he got back here, he would continue from time to time to write a letter from Rome, but he'd write it right from West 56th
West
Street
56.
because he felt that gave it the immediacy of a more direct reporting. But they were great days. Thurston Davis, of course, was a great figure at that time. Thurston Davis, the change, a very critical time in the magazine, too. Thurston Davis was the editor up to about 1968, and he was a staunch defender of what was the orthodox position on contraception at that time. And I think a lot of people felt that it was time Humanae Vitae was being examined from different angles. So I know Bob Mitchell, who was the New York provincial at that time, told me later that one of the hardest things he ever had to do was come down and tell Thurston Davis that he was not going to be editor-in-chief of America anymore. When I became editor-in-chief in 75, one of the things I did was ask Thurston if he'd come back and live here. And Dan Flaherty, who had been here for a lot of years, he harumphed as Dan Flaherty can do. And he said, that's a big mistake. Thurston will dominate. He's a dominating person. But he wasn't at all. He was terrific. Yeah, and he would, and one of the interesting things about Thurston Davis was that he did take a kind of dyspeptic view of some of the developments after the Second Vatican Council, but that never prevented him from helping individuals. For example, Rick Curry,
Brother Rick Curry, yeah.
Yeah. He thought this idea, this National Theater Workshop with a handicap, was kind of a crazy idea. But he went out of his way to help Rick meet people and do all this. And he did that on a number of occasions. He was a great figure in many ways. When it was time for his 50th anniversary as a Jesuit, he said, Joe, I don't like these celebrations, so really I don't want any celebration for my 50th jubilee. Well, he had a great friend, Bob Busey, who was then worked for the Bishop's Conference. And Busey, he had to do something for Thurston's 50th, so he was going to have a celebration. So I said, Thurston, Bob Busey is insisting we have a celebration for your 50th. He said, fine, Joe, then go right ahead. I will not be here, but you go right ahead. And that was the way he was. But he was a great figure, in, I think, in the life of the magazine, and not just the magazine. He'd been dean of Fordham College. And I'm told by Father John Donohue that he sort of revolutionized the place, which was kind of a sleepy place in the late 60s, or early 60s, I guess, when he went there. And John would say, Thurston shocked everybody as dean because he urged all the teachers to have a reserve shelf in the library where people could read books connected with it. It was unheard of at the Fordham of that time.
Good. Well, two towering figures in the history of the magazine, Father Thurston Davis, Father Donald Campion. We want to thank you, Father Joseph O'Hare, for sharing those memories. I want to thank you again for joining us for this special edition of the Meet America Magazine podcast. We would encourage you to go onto our website and explore the various features we have for our centennial, including a full PDF copy of the original issue published in April 1909, as well as a video chronicling our history. And, of course, all of that is available at americamagazine.org. For America Magazine, this is Tim Reed.